ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्याज्ञनञ्जनशलाकय चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नामश्रेष्ठां मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रम् अत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरूपुरीं मथुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुन्दं गिरिवरं महोराधिकमथावशम् प्राप्तो यस्या प्रतीत्यकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतस्मि। पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च अतीतानां पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौले रत्नमालदिते निराजितापदपङ्कजन्ता आजीमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितष्टं हरिणां संश्रयामि। नारेपितचरिं चिरात् करुणयावतीर्णाकलः क्षमार्पयितमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतसुन्दराद्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये खन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः। अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदतु सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्षु विश्वाम्बरुद्व्यावरोजुगधर्मपालो वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो। लादिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते। हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिककान्त राधाकान्त नमस्तुते। राधे वृन्दवनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनि कृपया निजपादब्जादशन्मह्यं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षये क्षिप्तशकमादितरङ्गमाध्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणां प्रपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। श्री सचिनंदन गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय। श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय। श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय। श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि 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 बोल। सो वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू। प्रणाम। माय प्लेजर टू be in your presence, and thank you so much Archana Siddhi for welcoming us and for that monumental introduction. It was not in my plan. I was not involved in writing that, just in case. So let's try to honor that somehow or other, those words that came to your heart. And today we will talk, as Archana Siddhi mentioned, about Mahaprabhu. As I mentioned the other day, we are somehow beginning a series of lectures during these days, also in connection to Gaur Purnima, which will be celebrated in less than 10 years. 10 years, sorry. Less than 10 days. And it's always important to build up for these important celebrations. It's not just something to limit to the official day of the celebration, like waiting, okay, for one day a year to remember Mahaprabhu and say something about him, and next day it's gone, it's over. But ideally, it's nice to build up to such a day with enough anticipation, and then so that when we reach the day, it overflows naturally for another period, another extended period of days. So far, so much that we are always, when the overflowing starts to exhaust, we are reaching the new day to build up for the next Gaur Purnima, basically. You know? So in this way, we are building up and overflowing and building up and overflowing till it becomes, ideally, some uninterrupted current. You know? Kirtaniya Sadahari, that's what Mahaprabhu is inviting us to enter into, a wave that it has no beginning and no end. It's perpetual, is eternal. So that's the idea. We'll be sharing some words these days of building up, till we reach the zenith, Gaur Purnima per se. I mean, I won't be here by that time, but I trust you will do your homework. And then after that zenith, the aftermath comes, or the overflowing comes, very much like the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is built in that way. You have the first nine cantos, which are kind of building up for the 10th canto, and arguably the 10th canto is building up for certain section of the 10th canto, like the Rasa Lila, to give an example. But what we have after that, the remaining chapters of the 10th canto, canto 11 and 12, is the overflowing of that, the aftermath of that, further reflection to make further sense of what happened in that zenith, and then we can start all over again. Or the Bhagavatam, in other words, will leave us at the feet of Gaur Lila, when we have another layer of embracing the Bhagavatam, if you will, and so on and so forth. So today we are starting more officially with that, although 2 days ago we started with our series of lectures on a somewhat unrelated topic. We spoke about faith crisis, but it's quite related to what we will be talking these days, because now we are starting to talk about Mahaprabhu. And 2 days ago we talked about faith crisis, about how human life itself is an existential crisis to be solved. And now we are talking about Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna in existential crisis. So we are going from one crisis to another, so to say. No? Faith crisis, how to solve our faith crisis, and Gaur Lila, how to help God solve his own crisis, no? on figuring out who am I. Krishna is asking, who am I? What's my heart? Which are the depths of my heart? How to taste that? And then we have a whole Lila, new Lila, manifesting to facilitate that exploration. Gaur Lila, we call it. It's a whole laboratory. When Krishna enters the laboratory of Sri Chaitanya there, to do an experiment, which means tasting. What does it mean to relish the heart of Sri Radha? And with all the consequences, it's a very delicate experiment. The whole laboratory may explode because very intense substances are being mixed one with another. And Krishna entering to Radha's heart, you never know what can happen there. But we are invited to assist him in this laboratory we call Gaur Lila forever. So also last year, I'm just starting to give some context to today's lecture. I remember last year I was here in Alachua for Gaur Purnim, right? We indeed gave a lecture here on Gaur Purnim, and the title was something like Sriman Mahaprabhu, the Ishtadev of Radical Personalism. And we were just publishing. we didn't publish the book yet, I think. It was March, right? So the book was not published, but it was on its way, and we decided to talk about how Sri Chaitanya was the very deity, the Ishtadev, of this principle of radical personalism. How is his Krishna in the radical project, again, of imbuing himself of Radhika's heart, and therefore we can call her Radhika's radical love, radical, Srimati radical personalism. Not from that came this idea. So we will continue today somehow unfolding what we talked last year. Mahaprabhu is the Ishtadev of radical personalism. Today we'll be talking, this was a topic that Archana Siddhi suggested, to talk not only of Mahaprabhu. That was one suggestion. Suggestion number two was, what about talking of Mahaprabhu in connection to this concept of Tadatmya, as the apex of Tadatmya? Tadatmya is a Sanskrit term which means basically, we can describe it as mystical empathy. So Mahaprabhu is the summum bonum, the zenith, the apex of mystical empathy. Now, which are the implications of that? Because Mahaprabhu is the Ishtadev, the deity of our Sampradaya. So our God is a God of empathy. He's an empathic God. So what does it mean? And most importantly, how we are supposed to represent such a God, because we are meant to be extended reflections of the heart of our deity. That's it. The price to pay in the contract. That's what you are signing for when you join Gaudiya Sampradaya, in case nobody told you. you still have time to escape, but doors are locked, so sorry, we are continuing here. So tadatmya, a few words on tadatmya. The term tadatmya means, again, mystical empathy, or you can translate it as oneness, but not oneness in the absolute impersonal sense of the term, that everything becomes one and there's no variety left, no possibility for interaction, but mostly like oneness of heart. No? When we experience oneness of heart, oneness of nature. And from that place, tadatmya sometimes has been described as sameness and not so much oneness, technically speaking. Sometimes the Sanskrit for oneness is ekatva or aikatva, like oneness in every literal sense of the term. And tadatmya means one otherness. It's mostly the tadatmya, not like identifying with what's going on in the other person's heart. So much that you forget about yourself. It's not that you stop existing, but yourself enters into the other person's heart by way of identification. The example given sometimes in the scriptures in this regard, Jiva Goswami gives the example of, famous example, the iron bar, that is put in the fire. And as long as the iron bar remains there, eventually it acquires the properties of the fire. It becomes fire-like, attains sameness with the fire, attain oneness in that sense. Still is iron bar, but it became fire-like. It attained tadatmya, or it became tadatmic with the fire, if you want to use that expression. So in that connection, as some of you may know, some months ago, the inspiration came to announce officially we make a Namkarana Samskar, a name-giving ceremony, to a Sangha, to a devotional alliance, and the name that we chose was Tadatmya, to illustrate as a natural outcome of the principles of radical personalism, especially seven main pillars that became the last seven chapters of the book. And we announced the name, maybe not so much apart from that, trusting that by invoking the name, the rest will follow accordingly. When Nam is in place, Rupa, Guna, Lila, all that will come in time. We trust that. The form, the qualities, the loving interactions. So we began with the name, which is Tadatmya. Sangha. Now, Sangha also means community without the H. Sangha means attachment. So you can refer to getting attached to be empathic with one another, to be willing to connect with one another to take seriously the experience of one another, whether it is us in connection to Sri Guru, Sadhu, us in connection to Krishna. But today we are presenting Sri Chaitanya as the apex of Tadatmya. So what does it mean? What does it mean that God is the zenith of empathy? So I briefly mentioned a few words in this inaugural talk. I will recall a few of those, which I assume that's why Archana Siddhi maybe felt. Let's talk about it. So first, I'd like to describe briefly a few examples of how Tadatmya will play out, this empathy, this principle of empathy in our daily relationships as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and how this culminates in Sri Chaitanya. And also you will notice that somehow or other, every ideal form of interaction includes Tadatmya, necessitates empathy to work, basically. So I will begin with the connection between humans, between sadhakas, or sadhaka humans, as I like to put it, just not to forget what does it mean to be a sadhaka. How we should interact with one another here on earth, one-to-one brothers and sisters, with empathy. And again, part of empathy, again, each one of these points requires a separate lecture, but to be empathic with one another, we can begin by just saying something as simple and maybe as complex as listening to one another, being willing and capable of listening, being fully present to receive each other in communication, in dialogue, being present, fully present to receive the other person, as we talk these days, without labeling, without judging, but unconditional acceptance. That's required. That's a prerequisite for Tadatmya. I cannot enter your heart I'm not opening my heart fully and I'm willing to let go of my assumptions and such a long list of stuff to explore and accompany you in your inner, in the inner core of your experience. So just very briefly, that's the dadmya between ourselves, learning to put our self-centeredness on the side and acknowledge there is something above that, which is connecting with your experience in the present moment and making you feel that by being fully present for you, as I will need you to be fully present for me. Not half-baked presence, but fully present presence. As we say, that's the best present I can give you. To be present in the present is the best present. And it sounds easy, but it's not so easy to listen. That's probably why the whole bhakti practices begin with shravan. And shravan is not just sit during the class and don't fall asleep. Also, shravan means learn to listen to the other person that is in front of you. And learn to be listened by the other person. Learn to see the other person. Learn, how to say, allow yourself to be seen also. Develop the capacity to be as vulnerable as possible that you can be naked internally speaking. Trust, learn to trust the other person. And learn to create safe spaces so we can promote that type of tadatmya, the type of exchanges. But both of us may be fully vulnerable, but fully empowered by being open in front of the proper person. And I stop there because I will go in that direction and Mahaprabhu will come on Gaur Purnima. That's one example of tadatmya, exhibiting empathy among one another as a form of affection, as Rupa Goswami will say, Priti Lakshana, revealing the mind, allowing others' mind to be revealed. That's another way of saying tadatmya. Then another form of tadatmya could be the guru-disciple relationship, in which the student fully identifies with the guru's desire, makes that desire oneself, tadatmya, identification, empathy. One absorbs the inner mood, the instructions of the teacher, and dedicates one's life to that person. And last but not least, this reciprocal, ideally. So it's not only that the disciple has to identify with the guru and the guru doesn't care for the disciple, or there is no reciprocal connection. So as the disciple is empathic with the guru is expected to be empathic with the disciple, because if the guru is not empathic with the disciple, he or she doesn't know what the disciple needs. And the guru needs to inhabit on some level the inner world of the student to be able to guide and mentor the student in a realistic way according to the student's lived experience. So in its own way, from different places, disciple has to be empathic with the guru, tadatmik. Guru has to be tadatmik with the disciple. So this is another expression of tadatmya, not only between friends, brothers, sisters, equals, but also between teacher and student. Of course, another form of tadatmya will be we as practitioners trying to be empathic or identify with God's will, trying to align ourselves with Krishna's will in our life, if you want to put it like that, leaving aside separate interests, ulterior motives, trying to fully identify what God wants in my life, which in part comes through the agency of the saintly people, of course. But also tadatmya in this case could mean between me and God, I have no separate existence from the object of my affection. I don't want to see my own existence as an independent orbit, so to say. Now, my own life doesn't revolve around its own orbit, but I'm trying to revolve around the life of God, so to say. I'm trying to allow Krishna to live his life through my life, so to say. Krishna's life, Krishna's heart is so huge, so deep, so broad that, again, it overflows and attempts to live through our lives. So we are supposed to allow that to happen. That will be another expression of tadatmya, in which we souls allow God's existence to penetrate us, so to say. Another more specific form of tadatmya, if you will, between devotee and divinity, more specific in our tradition in particular, for which the term tadatmya often comes, is the experience of Radha Dasyam, in which the manjaris or the young servants of Sri Radha become so identified with Sri Radha's experience and mood, they become tadatmic with her. In other words, whatever Sri Radha is experiencing, even on a physical level, all that becomes reflected in the manjaris. Sometimes the example is given, manjaris are like this bud from the flower. So if any other part of the flower becomes affected, naturally it will be reflected by extension in these buds. So that's another more specific expression of tadatmya in our tradition, on which level the manjaris are absolutely identified with what Sri Radha wants and needs, and they are able to anticipate all that even without she having to clarify, like, hey, girls, I need if you bring this, and I mean, there's no need for that. No. Just they are so much attuned with what Sri Radha is going through internally that they can know what's the next need of the moment, and they're already doing that. And somehow, by extension, a good disciple will be in that type of alignment with whatever is required by the guru or the sadhus because of the identification with the need of service. And that creates its own a vision onto itself, that you start to like get the pulsation, you say? Like you get the heartbeat of the situation and you can like anticipate that. Sometimes these type of definitions are given in the scriptures, three levels of disciples. The highest is the disciple doesn't need to be given the instruction because the disciple already is attuned with the need. The in-between disciple is you give the instruction and then they need to be given the instruction and they do it. And the lower type is you give the instruction and even if you give the instruction, they don't do it. It happens. Life happens. So anyhow. So all these are different levels of tadatmya between humans or sadhakas, between disciple and guru, between soul and God, between manjaris and Radha. But also we have tadatmya between Radha and Krishna, between God and God. So that's another level of mystical empathy. The ultimate tadatmya, we can call it. And now we are reaching our topic today. So the ultimate tadatmya, again, is not between two humans, between human and guru, human and God. It's between God and God, between Radha and Krishna. And it happens in both directions. As I'm talking about how much someone can anticipate the need of service and is totally identified with the necessities of the object of love. Well, Radha is that person. Sri Radha is absolutely attuned with whatever Krishna needs and absolutely identified and willing to offer from tip to toe her whole existence for the satisfaction of her beloved. Whatever form that takes, if it takes the form of Krishna embracing her, welcome. If it takes the form of Krishna deporting her, deporting, is it in English? Yeah. She's willing to that. As long as Krishna is happy, she's a fanatical of Krishna's happiness. No. So as long as something makes Krishna happy, that's it. That's the important thing. Then you tell me what to do. That's her mood. Now, in one sense, Sri Radha doesn't have a mood of her own, apart from whatever is anukul or favorable for Krishna's happiness. That's her mood. So whatever it's necessary for that to happen, she is willing to enter into that. So my point is, she's in this way so empathic with Krishna's needs that creates in Krishna some particular question and some particular thirst for him to be empathic with what's going on in her heart. Now, so in one sense, we could say Radha's tadatmya, the level in which she identifies with Krishna's heart and needs, make Krishna wonder or want to become tadatmic himself and try to experience why she's so tadatmic to me. What's her empathy toward me is propelled by? What's behind that? What's going on? I need to experience that. I need to be empathic with her empathy, basically. Huh? And then that, of course, the result of that experiment, as we say, Sri Chaitanya Dev, the empathic God. We can call Sriman Mahaprabhu officially as the God of empathy, who will identify, as we know, who is Krishna himself, identifying with the heart of Radha, trying to taste Radha Bhav. And that's why we are daring to address Mahaprabhu as the apex of Tadatmya. That's the title of today's lecture, Sri Chaitanya, the apex of Tadatmya. So in that sense, Tadatmya can be a name for Mahaprabhu. And that's also why we consider to name this devotional alliance that was formed Tadatmya, because generally every Gaudiya Vaishnava group includes some form of name of Mahaprabhu in their name. Whether it's a name directly from Mahaprabhu, like Sri Chaitanya Math or Sri Chaitanya Sarasvat Math, or it's the word Gaudiya, Gaudiya Mission, Gaudiya Vedanta Samiti, Gaudiya implies Gaudiya Sundar, or even ISKCON. ISKCON is Society for Krishna Consciousness. How do you say Krishna Consciousness in Sanskrit? No? Krishna Chaitanya. So name of Mahaprabhu is there. So we say, okay, Tadatmya Sangha. Tadatmya is the name of Mahaprabhu. Ultimately, he's the ultimate Tadatmya. So in that way, his presence is there blessing the project. So let's explore for a while. I mean, this was just an introduction to why this title, or why Mahaprabhu is considered the apex of Tadatmya, and what's Tadatmya. So let's spend a few minutes trying to connect with what does it mean? What does it mean that Krishna is tasting Radha Bhav? And again, all this is a preparation for Gaur Purnim, because Gaur Purnim means the appearance of Mahaprabhu, and the appearance of Mahaprabhu is because he mostly primarily comes to experience this Tadatmya, this empathy with the heart of Radha. Without it, there is no Gaur Purnim, basically. That's the main reason. And some other reasons are there, but that's the main reason. And that what makes Mahaprabhu, I mean, Mahaprabhu is Krishna. Please don't lose sight of this non-dual aspect. When we talk about these different phases of the Absolute, we are not talking about multi-gods. No? We are not promoting polytheism. So when I'm saying Varahadev, Kurma, Bhamandev, Mahaprabhu, Narayan, Krishna, they are not different guys in heaven. No, they are the same non-dual absolute expressing in different emotional moments. So Mahaprabhu and Krishna are the same person. It's simple, but we have to realize that. But Mahaprabhu has been depicted somehow. It's the same Krishna, but it's Krishna in an upgraded version, so to say. Krishna 2.0, as they say nowadays, no? So it's Krishna, but it's Krishna plus. Plus an experience that he lacks in Vrindavan. In the words of Gaur Govinda Swami, he will say, Krishna is like an unripe, like an unripe mango. Mahaprabhu is a ripe mango. That's heavy. I mean, I totally subscribe to that. But Krishna is an unripe mango. Krishna, known like the emperor of sweetness, and if you can think of it, mango means sweetness, and ripe mango is very sweet, and Krishna is the very embodiment of Madhurya. And he is, but in comparison to what Mahaprabhu is tasting, Krishna is an unripe mango, with all respect. That's an interesting way of speaking about that. Mahaprabhu's Leela sometimes is depicted, as you may know, as Parishishta Leela. So Parishishta means like an appendix of a book. And you have the book, but the author has some thoughts that need to be included to really make full circle to the whole work. Without the appendix, something is missing. The book is incomplete. So Braja Leela, Krishna Leela in Vrindavan, is the book without the appendix. Something is missing. Something is missing because Krishna is missing the experience of the love of Radha. And Gaur Leela comes as the appendix Leela to complete Krishna Leela, to take Krishna Leela to all that it can be. Now, actually, Gaur Leela is Krishna Leela in its full blossoming, where Krishna is finally successful being able to taste Radha Bhav. Because as we say the other day, the nature of love is paradoxical. That's a very important point, very important word. Love is paradoxical. Love satisfies all needs, and love creates a whole new set of necessities of itself. So all your previous needs are fulfilled by love, but love inaugurates a new thirst, a new level of craving that you could never imagine before having that love. Sometimes we feel we have needs without having love. We think those are needs. Wait till you reach love. Then you will understand what's the actual meaning of the word need. Now we feel I'm so needy, I need this and I need that. But in comparison to the real, truly necessities that come from real, true love, whatever needs we have now are just like, without wanting to insult our present situation, but this is what has been revealed from those who have reached the other side and have had a taste of actual necessity. And that's interesting because in Sanskrit, one word for necessity is prayojan. So sometimes we say prem prayojan. The ultimate goal of life is prem. But actually, technically speaking, the name is, the definition of that is the ultimate necessity of life is prem. And we may understand it as, okay, once I get that, there are no more necessities. But that's not the meaning of prem prayojan. It means you, once you get prem, then you start to have necessities. Then you start to understand what it means to be needy. Because love creates its own layer of needs. You can always love more. You will be, and again, do not get scared with my definitions, please. Hopefully you are not canceling your Golok project by hearing the... But prem, divine love, invites us to a state of eternal dissatisfaction. In which sense? In the sense that you can always love more. It's never enough. It's not that you will never hear Sri Radha saying, okay, I love Krishna enough. No. For today, bus. It's over. Our love reached a peak. It cannot increase anymore. So let's wait for a few days and we call when we can like kindle the flame a little bit. No, it's not happening like that. The nature of love, Rupa Goswami gives one symptom of prem is anurag. Anurag means the lover and the beloved see each other like if it were the first time they are meeting. Every single time they meet, it happens. Like every single time they meet, they are falling in love. Try to imagine that. There is a perpetual falling in love. And Sri Radha has been with Krishna 5 minutes ago and she sees him again after 10 seconds of being separated and she's asking Vishakha, who is that beautiful sapphire blue like jewel? And Vishakha is like, come on, you have been with him 2 minutes ago. No. It's not possible. It's not him. And in one sense, she's correct. Now Krishna has been upgraded to a higher version of himself. Now Krishna is more beautiful than it 1 nanosecond before. So now Krishna is more Krishna. Because Krishna means the all-attractive. So Krishna becomes more attractive. Krishna becomes more Krishna. And Radha's love increases to accompany the increased beauty of Krishna. That's what Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is saying. Krishna's beauty is increasing at every moment. And the love of the gopis and Radha in particular increases at every moment. The more they love they have and offer to him, the more beautiful he becomes. The more beautiful he becomes, the more love they have for him. And then he concludes the two of them engage in a competition where neither of them accept defeat. It's perpetual, ever evolving, unfolding. So what I was saying all this, I mean, I'm sincerely asking because I forgot. Well, that's a good point to go or back, yeah. You are going to say the same thing. Okay. Anyhow. We got lost and found in the ocean, but we can continue, no problem. So my point with all these is that that Krishna, the so-called unripe mango, he finds, again, this love of Sri Radha to be, I was talking about, that's my point, sorry, the nature of love which gives perpetual dissatisfaction, the paradoxical nature of love. This beautiful section, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, I like a lot, where Narad Muni meets Krishna. And he requests Sri Hari a very unusual blessing. Narad Muni asks Krishna, please, I want a blessing. Krishna says, yes, you request whatever blessing you want from me, that's given. Okay, so Narad Muni concentrates to present his request and say, may nobody who attains your divine love be ever satisfied. That's the blessing he requested. May none of that people who attain divine love be ever satisfied. So again, you start to get a glimpse into the psychology of love. Narad Muni is actually asking for a blessing. He's not cursing those who love. No? Oh, he's cursing us to be eternally dissatisfied. No, he's giving the blessing of, may you always be open to experience a further shore of satisfaction. So that's in itself astonishing, such a blessing he's requesting, but even more maybe surprising is how Krishna replies. And Krishna basically says, that's nonsense because that's already happening. No. I mean, basically he says that, like, Narada, but you have been traveling all over the three worlds in coming here. You have seen so many devotees who obtained prem. Have you witnessed one single devotee who was fully satisfied in their divine love? Narada said, no. So please request a more satisfying benediction, please. What you asked, that's already happening. That's the nature of love. You can always love more. You can always become further love. So I'm saying this because, again, Krishna is describing the scriptures as Rasaraj. Basically, he's the king of the connoisseurs of love. So he has experience in tasting love. But when he's confronted, so to say, with Radha's love, as the Bhagavatam is describing, that takes Krishna to a whole another level, where he even has to contradict himself to his embarrassment, so to say. He's famous for having said publicly in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Yatamam Prabhadanti Tamsataiva Vajamyaham. I reciprocate according to how everyone approaches me. Well, in Vrindavan, that verse is rendered obsolete in one sense. Or we could say, still rendered properly in the sense of, according to the degree of someone surrendered to me, I reciprocate. Okay. And then according to the degree of surrender of Sri Radha, I reciprocate by declaring that I cannot reciprocate. That's his way of keeping with that verse in the Braja Lila. He says to the gopis, as we know, Napara yaham nirabhadyasam juyan susadu kritam bibudayas. In the zenith of the Rasa Lila, which was the Gopi Gita, where Krishna was hidden behind a tamal tree, the gopis were singing in separation, dying, their hearts in kirtan, so to say, offering it, and Krishna is witnessing all that camouflage before behind a tamal tree. And Krishna had disappeared from the Rasa Lila with the intention of increasing the love of the gopis for him, which already is increasing anyway, whether he disappears or not, but he wants a special upgrade, so he created this separation dynamics. So that was his purpose for disappearing, but by witnessing the flourishing of the hearts of the gopis and Sri Radha in particular, in that moment, a new purpose came from disappearing from the Rasa Lila, and the purpose was, I want to taste what's expressing in this moment through the heart of Sri Radha. I want to taste her love. What's the nature of her love? What's the glory of her love? What's the beauty she finds in me? What's the happiness she derives by tadatmya, by fully identified with my heart? That I don't know. Existential crisis for Krishna Bhagavan. Again, that's Gaur Lila. So Gaur Lila is Krishna's attempt to to know himself through the lens of Radha's love. It's like if you know, have something who loves you a lot, and again, it's a comparison only, I'm not giving, it's not 100% accurate. You have someone in your life who loves you madly, very nicely, very deeply, very honestly, very tadatmically. At one point you start to wonder, what is this person seeing in me? You may even start to doubt, is he a cheater? Because I'm not, I mean, I don't deserve such a thing, but still that's there, it's real. What that person is saying in me, who am I in her or his eyes? So you become curious. You know? Mahaprabhu is in one sense a god of curiosity also, you know? Not only of empathy. His curiosity takes to his empathy. And that takes to Mahaprabhu being described in the scriptures again, not only as a ripe mango by comparison, but one definition that Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, paratattva simma. That's a very interesting word. In Bhagavatam, Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam, Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the words of Prabhupada. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu is paratattva simma, which is the highest limit of the Supreme Absolute Truth, the highest reach of he who is already the highest reach. No. So the highest reach of Krishna. As I like to say, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Krishna. When the Godhead is expressed in his Supreme Personality, that's Krishna. When Krishna expresses himself in his Supreme Personality, that's Gaur. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Mahaprabhu is such a supreme face of the divinity that his Leela and our service to him is not a mere bridge. Gaur Leela is not a mere bridge to Krishna Leela, but it's a fulfillment of Krishna Leela. And it's therefore a destiny unto itself. In Gaur Leela, we find Krishna with increased adhikar, with increased eligibility to taste the heart of Radha. For that, he needed some training and some experience in between. So we have Krishna upgraded. The mango now has ripened, so to say. The sweetness has been taken to another level. So this tadatmya. And remember, tadatmya means empathy. It doesn't mean everything became one. So in that sense, Mahaprabhu is not Radha and Krishna in every sense of the term. Mahaprabhu is Krishna tasting the heart of Radha. And that's tadatmya. Still, you retain your individuality, but you are entering the other person's heart. That's said by Swarup Dhamma. Radha Bhava Dyuti Subalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupam. Fifth verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Nomi Krishna Sarupam. Mahaprabhu still is Krishna, Krishna Sarupam, but he is Radha Bhava Dyuti Subalitam. He's enveloped by Radha's hue. And he's imbibed in Radha's heart. He's adorned by her heart and by her complexion. Krishna is famous in the Bhagavatam as being Bhushana Bhushanangam. Krishna is the ornament of his ornaments. That's the Bhagavatam, how it describes the Bhagavatam, as Krishna describes there. He has earrings, but the earrings are not ornamenting Krishna. Krishna is ornamenting his earrings because he's the ornament of all ornaments. But as Mahaprabhu, the ornament of all ornaments is ornamented by Radha's complexion and by Radha's bhava. In Gaur Leela, Mahaprabhu attains his ultimate. He becomes a consummate thief, a thief proper. Because in Krishna Leela, as we know, Mahaprabhu, Krishna is stealing whatever, butter, the gopis' butter, the gopis' clothes. He steals the cloud's complexion. No, he's famous for that as well. Maybe you sometimes heard the Chograganya Ashtagam. That's a very nice Ashtagam, which basically is all about, how to say, Krishna's list of theft. No, I don't know if you have an English expression for that. You find a criminal, this is your register or something like that. No? So it's one after another. No, you are stealing this from the cloud, this from the gopis. No, you steal the sins from your devotees. You steal the wealth for those who surrender to you. There are many statements to that effect in the Bhagavatam. Yasya Haman Ugrinam. But there is one, the ultimate theft, that is waiting and it's not happening, Krishna Lila, which is stealing Radha's heart and complexion and bhav fully. So that's why, that's when Krishna is known as Hari in Vrindavan. Hari means he who takes away, or the thief. In Gaur Lila, he becomes the golden thief, Gaur Hari. That's why that's one of the most... Hari also means lion, so it's also Mahaprabhu's roaring like a lion in Sankirtan and so on, but also he's stealing the golden, like sometimes you say, not the golden whatever, how to say, the golden years or the golden this or the golden times, like whatever is the highest is the golden stuff, no? So Mahaprabhu is a golden thief because he's stealing the golden complexion and the golden heart of Sri Radha. So he's a good thief. That's our hope. And therefore, Mahaprabhu, Krishna, who is Shyam, who is black complexion, becomes Gaura, Gaura Varna. Shyam Sundar becomes Gaura Sundar. As they have this saying in English, came the other, some years ago, this came, no? Like, so you say something is the new black. You have that, right? So we have golden is the new black. No? Gaura is the new Shyam. Basically, that's Gaura Lila. So Mahaprabhu is tadatmya with Radha. Again, it's Krishna tasting the heart of Radha. It's not absolute unity, because if there's absolute unity, what to do with Gadadhar Pandit, no? Which is Radha and Gaura Lila, which is another conversation. I won't go there, not even a second, because that's dangerous. No return ticket. So, but we want, so when we say Mahaprabhu's Radha and Krishna combined, is in a certain way. And to speaking which certain way Mahaprabhu's Radha and Krishna combined, that's the life and soul of the Rupa Noga Vaishnavas. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur say. Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahyanya Rupa Noga Janira Jivan. The life and soul for the followers of Rupa Goswami is to talk about Mahaprabhu being Radha and Krishna, but specifying in which sense Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna, and which implies invoking the notion of tadatmya, invoking the notion of how Krishna is identifying with Radha's heart, but retaining their identity, and implying the identity of someone like Gadadhar Pandit, who's actually got Radha and Gaura Lila, and I'm saying something about Gadadhar Pandit. Emptying her heart, so to say, so Mahaprabhu was Krishna can be successful in his mission, basically. That's all I will say. That Gadadhar Pandit is the most crucial figure in the whole Gaura Lila. Without his, her contribution, there's no Gaura Lila. I hope I've created enough intrigue for you to want to know more about this person. So you can try to imagine, no? Try to imagine. And this goes beyond imagination, of course. But this here we have Krishna trying to empathize with Radha's heart. Radha's heart, to be technical for a moment, Sri Radha is Krishna's heart, technically speaking. Sri Radha is an emotion, is divine love personified. Try to imagine you have an emotion, and we have lots of them, and that emotion can manifest as a person in your life. And you can interact with that personified emotion. Try to imagine. Scary. It's scary, right? Yeah, we don't have... Bhakti is not inherent. That we cannot resort to that emotion and make it personified. There are other emotions we can. But Sri Radha is Ladini Shakti personified. No? Ladini Shakti is one aspect of the Swarup Shakti, and I won't become too technical today. But it's a personified... The ultimate embodiment of love. Love has a form. Love is just not a mere abstract, energetic abstraction. But love appears in its ultimate condensed embodied form as Sri Radha. So this is what we call Lila. Gaudiya Vaishnava referred to Lila. It's God interacting with love personified in the dynamic of Lila or divine play. In Krishna Lila, this happens in a unique way. In Gaura Lila, it happens in its own unique way, of course. No? and in that dynamic of Lila, God's own heart God's own experience is taken by surprise. I mean, Krishna is not bereft of the experience of astonishment, which again, you cannot have that without Leela. If there is no Leela, if God just is all-knowing, all-potent, omnipresent, omni, there is no surprise. There is no possibility of astonishment, of what we will call chamatkar in Sanskrit. So for that, Leela is required. And in that Leela, again, God becomes so much overwhelmed by love that we will say in our tradition to the point that he forgets his God. That shows how much more love stands above God. And love makes God forget his God. But love doesn't make God forget love, right? He only forgets his God for the sake of increasing his love awareness, so to say. Krishna is so conscious of Radha that he forgets his God. Krishna is so conscious of Yashoda or Sridham, Patrak, Ratak. All of them are personifications of love. So he becomes so much aware of love personified that his idea, his designation of God as God falls to the back. And that's a heavy designation. That's not a joke. I mean, if you are God, you are God. No? You will remember it because God means you will remember everything. But somehow he forgets because love appears on top of God. Which that's the Gaudiya's conclusion. The Gaudiya's conclusion is love is on top of God. Love is the goal of life, not God. Krishna is not the goal of life. Krishna Prem is the goal of life. Or more specifically, Prem is the goal of life. Krishna Prem for us, but Prem is the goal of life for Krishna. Yes? I mean, it's not that Krishna doesn't have Prem, but he can have so much more Prem, and therefore Prem remains a permanent prayojan. Remember, prayojan meant necessity. So Prem is the ongoing necessity of life for us and for God. We share a common goal in life with God. Our goal in life is love. God's goal in life is love. So that universally establishes love supremacy. It's such a goal of life that it's the goal of life for everyone, including God himself. Try to imagine. That's the ultimate teaching of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Love rules, so to say. No? The most attractive Krishna for us is the one who is inclined at the feet of Sri Radha. No? There you have God surrender to love, personified. That's our deity. We worship a God who worships love. That, in Srila Prabhupada's words, will be most religions teach God is the ultimate object of worship. But we teach who is the ultimate object of worship for God. God has his own altar. God performs his own private worship. And in the form of Mahaprabhu, that's taking place very uniquely. It's Krishna himself trying to fully live the experience of his topmost devotee, of love personified, exploring what does it mean. Again, totally forgetful and oblivious to everything else. Chamatkar, in full astonishment. Krishna relishing the madness of the love of Radha and himself becoming mad. Mahaprabhu is so mad because Sri Radha is so mad in love of Krishna. And Mahaprabhu is being tadatmik with that madness, basically. That's the meaning of the Bhagavatam, as we say many times. If you pay close attention, you don't need to read the whole Bhagavad Gita. And please understand this in context. I'm not starting a campaign to not read Bhagavad Gita. I'm just saying, if you look at the Bhagavad Gita's cover attentively, which is always the same, mostly it's Krishna being the Uber of Arjuna, no? The driver. So if you see that cover properly, which happened with this devotee in South India, which Mahaprabhu met, he was just pouring tears by looking at the cover of the Gita. He was not able to read the book because he was, how do you say in English? Illiterate. Thank you. Spanish is a very different word. That's why I couldn't relate. Analfabeto. So anyhow, so he was crying by watching the cover. Mahaprabhu said, why are you crying so much? Maybe someone is bullying you and you're lamenting that you don't know how to read. No. That's not the case. No, I'm just seeing Krishna being the driver of his devotee, God being conquered by love to such a degree that he becomes the servant of his servant, and I cannot contain myself. That's about, Mahaprabhu said, you understood the essence of the Gita. This of the Gita is bhakti, and a bhakti which reaches such a point that God becomes a bhakta of his bhaktas. That's the definition given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's very interesting how Sukadev Goswami, in the 10th canto, he defines the word Bhagavan. Sometimes for Bhagavan, we'll say God, the Almighty, the All Opulent, all these qualities. Sukadev Goswami says Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktiman. Bhagavan is the bhakta of his bhaktas. That's Bhagavan. That's how I choose to define Bhagavan, says Sukadev Goswami. He's the bhakta of his bhaktas. He's the devotee of his devotee. That's Bhagavan. That's the real Bhagavan. Half-baked Bhagavan, all-powerful, all-opulent, all-renounced, all that stuff. Full-baked Bhagavan, the Uber of Arjuna. No? Servant of his servants. Totally captured by love. So we have that in the Gita. You see the cover? That's it. With the Bhagavatam, similar. You don't even need to go to the cover. You just hear the name of the book. Srimad. You don't even need to go to Bhagavatam. Just listen to that first word, Srimad. I'm making a play of words here, but it's applicable. Dasarat Sutta Pro, don't chastise me if I'm transgressing some Sanskrit rules in this precise moment. It's a play of words for the sake of rasa. The Srimad. What's Srimad? It's the mad or the madness. In Sanskrit, madness is mad. The madness of Sri for Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what the Bhagavatam is about. Srimad Bhagavatam is about the madness of Sri. Sri is a name for Radha. So that's what the Bhagavatam ultimately is about. The madness of love of Srimati Radharani for Krishna. So we have eyes to see, ears to hear. Just the title, the first part of the title of the book will hint us what the whole thing is about and which are the consequences of that. Because as we say, no, it doesn't end there. No? Radha exhibits this level of madness in divine love, and the necessary conclusion or continuation of that is Gaur Lila. Gaur Lila is a necessary thing to happen. It's a natural consequence of Krishna witnessing and trying to be empathic with Radha's love. And that's why the very last verse of the Bhagavatam is like giving us a trailer, what's next. And the last verse of the Bhagavad, Namasan Kirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranasanam Pranamoduka Samanastam Namami Padharim Padam. It's offering pranam to the Sankirtan, Namasan Kirtan. It's leaving us at the feet of Gaur Lila. Bhagavatam touches its reach, its zenith, the madness of Sri Radha, the implications of that. Krishna wants to taste that. I'm concluding Gaur Lila. Okay, fasten your seatbelt. We are going to Navadvip now. No? Basically, that's the idea. So this is the God we worship, no? Krishna wondering, if I get to know what's in her heart, then I can consider my life successful. Without that, I'm not successful. I don't know everything. The Veda says, Jasmin Bigyate Sarvame Bam Bignatam Bhavati. We could say, by knowing him, you know everything. No? It's a way of saying in the Upanishad. By knowing God, you know everything you need to know. But Krishna himself thinks, by knowing her, I will know everything. No? So we have this another layer of application. By knowing her, I'll know everything, myself included. I'll know who I am by knowing her heart. So in this way, Krishna's Mahaprabhu becomes the empathic God. But as we also mentioned, this is first and foremost because Sri Radha is the empathic goddess. First goddess, then God. First love, then God follows. So if Krishna is attracted to empathize with Radha's heart, it's because she's first and foremost, we could say, so attracted to be empathic with his heart. She's totally, as I say, totally fanatical about Krishna's happiness. You go to the last verse of Sikshastakam, which is the verse that Mahaprabhu recites and Krishna Das Kaviraj say, this verse was spoken by Radha. This verse signals that Mahaprabhu was successful. And there he's saying, what? No matter what Krishna does, he can do whatever he wants. He can embrace me. He can reject me. I'm unconditionally his servant and he's my prananath. He's the Lord of my life, unconditionally, no matter what he does. I'm totally empathic with serving him fully. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami elaborates that verse in Bengali Padas very beautifully. No time to go there now. But whatever is Krishna's greatest happiness, that's her greatest happiness. For example, to say that one thinking about Krishna's happiness and thinking how Krishna's happiness needed to attain a new degree of happiness, and for whatever reason she was not able to facilitate that in that moment, it is described, that's one of the explanations. She rather starts to cry profuse tears of lamentation of she not being able to fully be there to satisfy that need, and that formed a beautiful Mansarovar in Vrindavan, this lake which is said to be made of the tears of Radha. There are different explanations for this Leela, but one of them is that she's so empathic and so in tune with what Krishna needs that if she cannot facilitate that, that's kind of universal devastation for her. Or also it's mentioned that in some occasions in separation from Krishna, here we have a different direction. Krishna is like light complexion here, which generally, that's an interesting point. You may have heard about that, but many times, generally Krishna is not famous to be clear in his complexion light. So why he's light? Archana Siddhi, please tell us. Okay. So sometimes the opposite happens. Sometimes Sri Radha is in full empathic absorption in Krishna in separation, and she will become Shyam Varna, her color will turn dark like Krishna's. So that's another way of showing the empathy. And that's interesting because one of the main deities that you will find in this connection, I mean, you find that in one diorama in Imlitala in Vrindavan, but most famously, I will say, a deity of Radha, fully Shyam Varna, fully dark color is in Tota Gopinath in Jagannath Puri. And it's interesting because that's the deity worshipped by Gadadhar Pandit, who is Sri Radha, totally empathic with Krishna as Mahaprabhu, emptying herself, identifying with her mood. And then you have a deity of Radha in the color of Krishna showing how empathic she is with Krishna. And we hear that Mahaprabhu entered that deity and he concluded his Leela there also. No? So, I mean, entering Tota Gopinath, but next to Radha in that particular mood. So we could say in that sense that Radha turned blackish before Krishna turned golden also. Again, her empathy is the kickstart for Krishna's own project, so to say, Krishna's own empathic project. So in that sense, Sri Radha is the guru of empathy of Krishna. And Krishna learns the art from her, and he becomes Gaur Krishna. And literally, this is what it says through the pen of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Radha is Krishna's guru. Radha's prem is Krishna's guru. Radhikar prema guru, ami sishya nata. Krishna is saying, the prema of Sri Radha is my guru, and I'm a student in her dancing school. And her dance, and her prem makes me dance many wonderful dances. I'm like a puppet in her school. That's what's said. I'm not Artabad. I'm not exaggerating here. That's literally in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna himself saying, I'm a puppet, puppet-like student in Radha's Prema Vidyalaya, school of divine love. I'm a student. God is a student of love. God is a puppet of love. Again, that's the God we worship. That doesn't diminish Krishna's stature. On the contrary, that speaks louder and higher about the substance of our divinity. So anyhow, this is the God we worship, a tadatmic God, an empathic God. And a few words just to conclude. We are supposed to represent that. We are supposed to, or how, it's good we ask how we are supposed to represent that. A God that is so fully subservient to love, so fully empathic with the reality of love and with the principle of empathy. Well, of course, to begin with, of course, it's important to understand what's empathy, because sometimes empathy is mistaken with sympathy or with pity even, no? Which many times sympathy and pity are still very much pervaded by our own assumptions and conceptions and preconceptions and feelings, while empathy requires that you take all those, your own conceptions, put them in a box, call Amazon and send them over above the window somewhere else for real empathy to be there. So you can be filled with the world of the other person. Again, that requires a deep level of renunciation, of self-forgetfulness. It's not as easy as it sounds. Okay, let's be empathic. No, you really have to be willing to let go preconceptions, judgments, your own sense of identity through which we generally project all these types of filters and allow the immediacy of the moment to capture you absolutely, whatever that will be, which is not in your control. And that would maybe be the most terrifying thing. Empathy means I'm not going on to a control cruise. Now, this is not a certainty trip. I'm willing to risk, quote unquote, my comfort zone to explore your heart. If we are not willing for that, there is no empathy. Something else that we are labeling as such. So again, we worship a God of empathy. We can learn empathy from our deity, from our God. And we are supposed to be reflecting that, as we say today, in how we relate with one another, in how we connect with the principle of guru or divine guidance, in how we align ourselves with God's will, and so on and so forth. It's all empathy from heaven, earth to heaven, so to say. Right now, from here, in our most immediate relationships, till assisting God's empathy with himself, so to say, with herself. Also, I will say in particular, what Mahaprabhu gives to us, I will say considering some of the various toxic layers of our Gaudiya community that need to be not only addressed, but healed on a societal level, is the in Gaur Lila, we have the if you want to put it like that, the archetype masculine, finally understanding the archetype feminine through empathic union, through empathic connection. So in the Gaudiya community, there is lots of work to do in terms of integrating the feminine side, healing the feminine archetype, allowing that to happen, allowing that to exist. So I think we need, I mean, by addressing Mahaprabhu as the empathic God and all that it entails, as we are trying to share today briefly, this empathic appreciation of the divine feminine can create so much comprehensive healing in the whole Gaudiya structure of our society, the structure of our society. What to speak of taking us to deep levels of bhajan and experience, of course, also as well. But in the way we relate to all that is feminine, we need lots of integration, lots of healing. Because if not, we end up being like a dysfunctional culture that worship the goddess, but in practice is completely unhealed in terms of relating to other expressions of femininity, including those who pertain to one's own identity. So for that reason, and for many other reasons, empathy is so much required. No, I mean, especially nowadays, I mean, we live in times in the world beyond even our society, including, but beyond, where, let's be honest, empathy is not the most popular virtue, no? Where people is becoming more and more proficient in hearing and listening and connecting person to person and being willing to be present. And I mean, there's more and more levels of sociopathy and narcissism and dysfunctionality in terms of just having a basic human conversation for 5 minutes without looking at the cell phone. What to speak about deep empathic appreciation. So my point is, the more the disastrous scenario we are confronting, the more we need the antidote in the form of empathy, of tadatmya, no? To rekindle human empathy, human connection, the capacity for dialogue, for listening, for connection, basic connection. Then we, of course, the zenith of tadatmya, the apex of tadatmya is Sri Chaitanya, but with today's lecture, I don't want to sound evasive of, let's jump to the apex. No, we are pointing to the whole stratum until the apex, but probably after appreciating that apex, we have to go down and learn to have a conversation, a human, decent human conversation among brothers and sisters. So in that sense, we can also establish Sri Chaitanya as our Ishtadev, as our deity of mystical, sacred empathy, so we can navigate successfully all these different chapters of empathy we need to go through, we need to integrate as sadhakas. So anyhow, some thoughts I want to share today regarding Sri Chaitanya, the apex of tadatmya, as a warming up for Gopurnim, gradually trying to, from different angles, appreciating who Mahaprabhu is. Tomorrow we'll be talking about Mahaprabhu as the ever-evolving God, continuing on this principle of the experience of Krishna evolves into Mahaprabhu. But it doesn't mean that it all stops with Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu reached some experience and he's done. And he has nothing else to do. But how he continues evolving his inner experience, and how, again, that is to be reflected in how we can also participate in an ever-evolving adventure. Because as one friend of mine said, God is more interested in adventure than he is in keeping the status quo. Another good definition of Leela. So, any questions? Something you may like to ask? Something you may like to share? I don't know who will. Yeah, we will go to the two of you. Sarga, Devi, yeah.
Just trying to collect a lot of what you've, you know, some pieces of what you've presented in relation to the apex. Say the name again.
Tadatmya.
What was running through my mind is, because you're describing very vividly this tadatmya on this such a high transcendental platform for us. And I was thinking if you could explain this idea of tadatmya in relation to the holy name, because I feel that would help me to be able to bring home this idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of course, the immediate thing, I mean, I repeat the question for those who are online who may not be able to listen to your question here. The question is if I can share some words of the of how the principle of Tadatmya plays out in our connection with the holy name, that it may facilitate more integration of the idea in one's own life. So, of course, the immediate idea that comes first is the holy name, Abhinatvam Namanam, you know, the name of Krishna is not different from Krishna. So, in one sense, all that we have said in connection to Krishna applies to the name because the name is Krishna. That's one point. Of course, we can extend similar ideas. Namaiva Paramo Guru, say the Puranas, the name is the topmost guru, so we can apply that in connection to the idea of Tadatmya as guru-disciple. But I will say that on a personal level, to make it hopefully simple and practical, one way to express Tadatmya or empathy with the name of Krishna or for ourselves to identify with the name. Remember, we spoke of Tadatmya in relation to us as being able, if I want to be empathic with you, I have to be willing to leave aside my presuppositions and enter your heart and listen to you also and receive you as you are. That's how I can connect with you purely. So we can extend that same principle to the name. You know, we are chanting the name, but also we are listening. That's so important to listen what's coming in that moment. So that's a way of applying Tadatmya. To be empathic with the name is listen to the name, receive the name, host that, pay attention to the syllables, chant attentively. Prabhupada will say chant attentively, which in part means listen. It's not only chanting, it's not only a lip moving service, but it's also hearing what's coming. I'm paying attention and listening attentively. As Paul Tillich will say, the first duty of love is to listen. So if we want to love the name, if we want to develop a relationship of love with the name, which is the idea, well, we may begin by listening, by paying close attention, by giving all of our time and energy in the present moment to that sound. Giving quality time, investing quality time. That's a way of expressing the Tadatmya, of opening myself to the reality of the other person, because the name is a person. Receiving it, listening to it, taking it seriously, being attentive, and being open to whatever has to be revealed through that sound. Being open and not projecting my own inner world onto that sound. It should be happening like this. I should feel like that. This should be the mercy. This should be the blessing. Many times we project our own list of limitations onto how the name should feel like, how Krishna should show mercy, how everything should happen. And that's not so much openness to allow the other person to enter your heart and life and show you the ways, to say. So also it's important, another aspect of Tadatmya will be that, to chant openly, attentively, fully present, and fully willing to be taken to whatever that those syllables want to take us in that moment. That will be my reply. I hope that helps. That's Sarasvati Prabhu, you have a question or a comment?
Tadatmya. A lot of us might not have that phrase in our vocabulary. We don't say it to each other. We may or may not have even read it in any book. What it is. Could you please just tell us what's the mool shloka or chapter or conflict, wherever this is found?
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to make the word popular. I know that nobody's using it, so my life project is this will be part of your vocabulary. I hope, not because it's a sangha I've been involved in, but just by you analyzing, hearing all what that entails and means, you may realize, well, that seems a pretty important word in our tradition, no? So let's incorporate that. So regarding your question, if there is some main verse or main section in Shastra where we will find this word, tadatmika or tadatmya, any of those two. Yes, that's chapter 30 of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So that's one of the main chapters because it's one of the five chapters of the Rasa Lila. And especially in chapter 30, that appears like at least four or five times in different verses describing the gopis. In this particular case, it's speaking about how the gopis become tadatmik with Krishna when he disappears from the Rasa Lila. And in separation from Krishna, they are identify with him on different levels, even to the point that we didn't go in that direction today, but they even start to imitate their lilas, and at one point even to say, I'm Krishna. So that's a very interesting expression of tadatmya to explore as well. But that will be like the section par excellence in the Shastra where we will find this word coming quite a few times. In other parts of the Bhagavatam as well, but in that chapter of the chapter 30 of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And then also in the literature of the Goswamis, this is being used, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, especially when Rupa Goswami describes how the Tathasta Shakti becomes imbued with Swarup Shakti while remaining Tathasta Shakti. Again, this example of the iron bar and the fire comes there, Jiva Goswami in the purport explains that. So yeah, those will be some of the main sections in the scriptures, and then many of our acharyas use the expression, especially more even above tadatmya, use the expression tadatmik, which means someone who engages in tadatmya. So one becomes tadatmik with one's guru desire, one becomes tadatmik with Krishna's will, the manjaris become tadatmik with Sri Radha, and so on and so forth. So yeah.
So if it's just a few words here and there, how did it become such an important issue that, for example, you're able to lecture so much on it today? Who has pulled out that word and expounded it so much to be so important?
He wants to embarrass me. I mean, I'm not claiming here, I'm coming here to give proper honor to the word and put it in its deserved throne. Because again, I've heard that from different sadhus and acharyas, although I agree it's not the most popular word, but when you, the times, at least I personally heard it, it was pretty important and it made good sense for me that, okay, this is applying in so many levels. Of course, we can use other words to indicate similar realities even in Sanskrit, but also it sounds very nice to me. So there's the aesthetic layer to that as well. And that's why also we decided to use that word for the name of the Sangha, also because it had some oral appeal, so to say. But if I can contribute something to the Gaudiya Sampradaya about emphasizing the importance of the word to that and making it more normal, that's, I'm happy to do that. It doesn't speak about me being higher than anyone, but just... I mean, and I don't want to sound I will be a fanatical that I will repeat tadatmya every 10 words to whomever I meet so they really understand the importance of it. But yeah, it's there. It's there in Shastra. It's there in the books of our acharyas. And I think many of us at times have done those discoveries like, okay, this word or this verse or this emphasis is there, but sometimes it has not been made that official and Krishna sends some special inspiration and one person or the other will be like presenting that particular viewpoint, and other one will present another viewpoint, and it's a compliment. So, yeah, we are all serving the same cause.
it's confidential, right? It's a confidential. It's used in confidential past times.
Yeah, we will say it won't be a word that you should, introduce a newcomer to the Sunday feast. Like, sit down, let's talk about that. I mean. But you can also talk about tadatmya. It's confidential, but also generally how it's used. But if you really, as I tried to make today the point, if you explore the implications of the word, it can be very down to earth and to be empathic with one another, that's, you can also use the word tadatmya, but you can use the exact same word to talk about the apex of tadatmya. So yeah, it can be very confidential, it can be very basic, although it's not so basic to be perfectly empathic among humans. So yeah, but generally its use is a little bit more in the direction of confidentiality, we could say. So I feel also the inspiration to extend that use to in both directions, because generally it hasn't been used to portray Mahaprabhu, for example. Although, again, if you play out the implications of the word, it applies to him. So I felt, okay, let's extend that up to that. But also it has not been used that much in terms of being humanly empathic. Let's extend it to that as well. So let's try to show the full range of application of that single jewel-like term, so to say.
And it's radically personal.
If you say so.
Your message.
It's connected, of course, with the idea of radical personalism, totally. Because to be empathic means, I mean, you have to be radically personal to be empathic with someone. If you are not willing to do that, to really enter radically, person radical, remember, means to the root. So if I want to be empathic with you, it's have to go to the very root of who you are as a person. I have to take a very personal decision to put aside my assumptions and preconceptions voluntarily, personally, to dive into your inner world. So yeah, it's quite tied to the notion of radical personalism. That's why we felt it's a good name, because Tadatmya Sangha is a natural outgrow of radical personalism. So the name should bridge all these worlds to put them together. Yeah.
And looking for other synonyms, we're saying using the word empathy, but in the Sanskrit dictionary, a lot of these words will have like a dozen or more, even two dozen meanings.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to empathy, I was just thinking of the tadatmya, and I was thinking it could also be a resonance, resonating with something.
Yeah.
And in brainwave technology, there's a thing called entrainment. By hearing certain frequencies, you entrain your brainwaves.
Mm-hmm.
So like, conquer anxiety or whatever they're trying to accomplish. So this tadatmya can be you're entraining to the object of your meditation.
Mm.
Like gogis are entraining to Krishna's pastimes, and I'm lifting over on hill, and they're doing different things because they're resonating, they're having a magnetic identification and entrainment to Krishna.
Thanks for that.
As well as empathy. It's all of them.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm always happy to continue expanding my understanding of tadatmya and of everything. Thank you.
Be a characteristic of Priti, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there would be levels of it, would there not be? There would be levels of tadatmya.
Yeah.
Correct?
Of course.
All the way from mamata, all the way up to mamata.
Yeah. Priti visayananda, tadas rayananda, as they say. No, in Priti, in love, the object of the asraya. The happiness of the Asraya is the happiness of the Vishaya. No? So the object of the object, the happiness of this, of the vessel of love is the happiness of the object of love. No? So this also speaks about the dynamics of Priti, which is I'm happy when you are happy, and that entails this entrainment, resonance, empathy, connection. Srila Sri Maharaj will call it, in his own words, the dynamic there is self-forgetfulness in divine love. No? And one says, my whole being doesn't disappear, but I become so much identified with what's going on in the heart of my beloved that I'm totally there, totally connected with the needs of service. Again, if we are talking about Priti, we are talking about, as we say before, a world where the needs, as we say, back today, real needs are in the realm of Priti. No? Real necessities happen in the realm of love. So there's so much service to be done because there are so much needs of love to be fulfilled. So that creates corresponding degree of service opportunity and service necessities. That's why the Leela can continue 24/7 without exhausting its resources. It's like, hey, we are boring every single day at 8:24. We are doing, nobody's complaining because the nature of purity of love is self-refreshing and creating these new layers of craving and longing and that creates corresponding service necessities that we identify with. And but yeah, we can speak about levels, but also when we speak about levels, remember this idea that priti is not a static reality. Priti, or it's a word for love or affection, specifically used by Jiva Goswami, priti sandhara. The nature of priti is impermanent expansion. So in that sense also we can speak about levels. Because sometimes for us levels is, okay, Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, levels till Prem. And then you have the sub-levels of Prem, Sneha, Man, Pranaya, Raga, Nurag, Bha, Mahab. But still you have levels of that further unfolding for eternity, if you want to call that levels of or degrees. But it keeps expanding, which of course is mind-boggling, but you have to understand that's the nature of love. And you have to understand the problems if that wouldn't be the case. The problems of conceiving love as fixed maximum, perfection is a fixed maximum, there's nothing else to attain beyond that. The whole Astaka Liya Lila project collapses again, because you reach a top, there's nothing new to experience, and everything starts to become boring, stagnant. The whole Lila goes to ruin. That cannot happen. And that will not happen, of course. So yes, yeah, very interesting dynamics. Something else? Yes.
Just so that we reiterate some of the things.
Yes.
You said, like, you know, our God is a God of love. And our Radharani is a personification of Krishna's heart. And when we hear the past tense in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, we keep hearing again, it's just so amazing that we can feel that from Lord Chaitanya, because I'm here. He broke open the storehouse of love of Godhead and freely distributed the contents to everybody. And he's got the karma. And it's just so beautiful. And the example how he relates to his devotees, you know, like just been hearing about his meeting with Sanatana Goswami. And, you know, someone thought that was a Muslim mendicant. No, it was really, you know. And he's embracing them, you know, and they're in ecstasy, you know, and crying and fainting. So that is an example for us of what you're talking about, that tadapya, that our trying to align with Krishna's desire and experience that love. You know, by seeing the example of Lord Chaitanya, say that's like another purpose. He's teaching us how to be a devotee, how to be related with one another. I was thinking, you know, what many of his associates, you know, his intimate associates, they were from Krishna Leela. You know, they came again, like Ramananda Roy was Vishakha. So he was hearing from Ramananda Roy up to the highest point of, you know, Mahabharata description. And so, yeah, when he met him, he said, "You're the most magnificent, you know, to tell me all these things." And because he was meeting Vishakha, but, you know, Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Radharani, maybe you can clarify this sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, in the beginning, yes, we could say, yes, that Mahaprabhu is teaching us tadatmya in the way we can, or we can express tadatmya with Mahaprabhu in the sense of how Mahaprabhu is Krishna. Of course, Mahaprabhu is a complex personality. It's not only one thing, but one of the things he is Krishna in the mood of a devotee and as an acharya and teaching by example how to conduct ourselves as devotees. So in that sense, that facilitates tadatmya. We can like try to empathize and identify ourselves with how Mahaprabhu like unfolds his teaching lila as an acharya, as a sannyasi, how he gradually goes from the basics of chanting Harinam. I mean, that's not basic, but my point is he's instructing his associates of chanting and practicing in a certain way, and gradually his lila starts to to take him to Gambira. Now he becomes more and more of a recluse and starts to relish more and more esoteric content, so to say. So like also setting an example for devotees, like to, you cannot rush onto that, but also you have to know that your practice gradually has to converge into that. But for that to happen, there's some few things in between. Now the Bharisik Shastakam is very clearly setting all these stages. The 8 verses are kind of corresponding to that, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur at least. So that on one side, we can express another form of tadatmya to Mahaprabhu and how he is an acharya, Gaurlila is acharya lila. And in connection to your question, if I understood correctly, of Mahaprabhu Krishna being instructed by Ramananda Roy, not only, of course, in the Gambira, but when they meet in Godavari, of course, that requires a series of 108 lectures separate, the conversation, the Ramananda Samba. But in brief, the explanation will be, of course, that Mahaprabhu needs to be instructed not only by Ramananda Roy, but then by Swarup Damodar, accompanied, supported, because they are Lalita and Vishakha. So they are the intimate friends of Sri Radha, and they are accompanying Krishna in his project of tasting Radha Bhava. I mean, Krishna, remember, he's a student of Radha's school of law. He's a student. He's not the headmaster of the school. So he's attempting, he's trying to taste that, and he's trying and trying. So he needs people supporting him who know what's in the heart of Radha. So Lalita and Vishakha appear in the form of Ramananda and Swarup Damodar to assist Krishna to taste Radha Bhava. And the more, and again, I'm going to Godavari Pandit here for a moment, but the more Mahaprabhu, Krishna's Mahaprabhu, is tasting Radha Bhava in Gambira more and more and more and more, correspondingly to that, Gadadhar Pandit is disappearing into the background. Because Gadadhar Pandit is Sri Radha in Gaurlila. So Sri Radha is giving sustainable installments of her heart to be tasted to Krishna, to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu is tasting more and more. And the more he's tasting, the more Radha disappear, because the more Mahaprabhu is becoming Radha. So naturally, at the very end of the Leela, when Mahaprabhu is bathing himself in the glory of fully tasting Radha Bhava, Gadadhar Pandit has disappeared completely. If you follow Chaitanya Charitamrita, Gadadhar Pandit is not mentioned anymore. You may wonder, where is Gadadhar Pandit? It's in Gopinath, Tota Gopinath, witnessing in Samadhi, in the inner eye of trance, how her Prananath, her beloved Krishna, is being successful tasting Radha Bhava. And she's giving herself fully, but disappearing behind the curtain. That's also the glory and the humility of Radha's love. She's making it all possible, but all the spotlights are not on her, are on Krishna tasting that. But Radha's Gadadhar is facilitating all that. He's making it all possible, but it's totally unassuming, behind curtains. No, is the person that people speak the least in the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, and is the most important one. That speaks further about the integrity and the glory of that love. No? But yeah, Krishna needs assistance to be successful. And he was successful, and that's again another conversation, but maybe tomorrow we'll touch upon that. And although Mahaprabhu fully tasted Radha Bhava, Radha's heart is a bottomless ocean, so you can never fully taste it. And that's why Gaurlila must be eternal. That's why we need a Nityanavadvip, where Krishna's Mahaprabhu is forever dedicated to continue to plumb the depths of Radha Bhava forever, no? Because it has no end. So I think we finished on a good high point, and we'll leave it there. And tomorrow we'll continue talking at Pranada's house on a related topic, which is on Mahaprabhu's ever-evolving experience of love. So. Thank you so much, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Gopinadju ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Gadadhar ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda ki jai, Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Hari Hari Bol.
Thank you, Maharaj.